I recently read from the World Health Organization's International Classification of Diseases that it has grown to distinguish more than 13,000 different diseases, syndromes, and types of injury. In other words, more than 13,000 different ways the body can fail. And for nearly all of them, science has given us things we can do to help. Even though we cannot cure the disease, we can usually find ways to reduce the harm and the misery it causes. But for each condition, the steps are different and they are almost always never simple. Clinicians now have at their disposal some 6,000 drugs and 4,000 medical and surgical procedures, each with different requirements, risks, and considerations. It is a lot to get right. And so this is referring to medical doctors, but it's so similar, and if not more challenging, to be a mental health therapist. Because each client, just as each medical patient, has to have a highly individualized treatment plan. And sometimes multiple different therapeutic techniques to try and alleviate suffering. It's an ongoing dance. That's what therapy is with each client. So I write this from a perspective of having over, I really need to sit down and figure this out, but it's somewhere between 35 and 40,000 hours in the chair, face to face with clients. And I can tell you from my experience, before meeting a client for an upcoming session, say there's 5 minutes before our appointment time, 2 minutes, 1 minute, I still to this day get a teeny bit of anxiety or feelings of butterflies in my stomach, in my chest, as I'm about to engage with another human being with their particular issues, their particular idiosyncrasies, what they have come to therapy for. So on my desk, as I'm doing this podcast, I have probably 30 files. That's probably what I'm seeing right now. I'm just working part-time, kind of semi-retired, loving what I'm doing. I try not to see more than 4 clients a day. But as I look at these 30 charts on my desk, every one of them needs something different. And it's like, and sometimes when I'm seeing clients back to back to back or 4 hours straight, it's like I'm totally engaged with one individualized treatment plan. Then I need to switch hats as the next client comes before me, and so forth. And this dance just continues to go on. And so, how do we best do that? There are so many different therapies out there, so many different approaches. There are things in the field of therapy called best practices, and something to be called a best practice means that it has gone through some rigorous trials and it has met certain standards, as that it is shown to provide some method of support. You know, EMDR therapy for post-traumatic stress syndrome. Of course, cognitive behavioral therapy, DBT, dialectical behavioral therapy. And then there's medication-assisted therapies. There's ayahuasca, there's ketamine treatment for those dealing with severe PTSD issues. There's exposure therapy. Exposure therapy is dealing with anxiety or stresses or fears that people have, that step by step, the therapist will place them into increasingly stressful situations until they are facing their fear. And I've seen that be extremely successful in many cases. However, there are times when that's not the appropriate therapy, and it just re-traumatizes a person if they're not ready for it. And I've seen EMDR therapy do significant positive things for clients dealing with PTSD. That's one that I prefer to use, and associated with ART therapy, accelerated resolution therapy that also uses eye movements, but it engages more active imagination of changing memories, using your active imagination, going back and then locking them in with eye movements. But the point is that every individual that I meet with needs something different. And this might not work for this individual, but it will work for this individual, and so forth. And so the dance, it really, it's kind of a philosophical and ethical thing. It goes back to the Greek philosophers, Aristotle, Plato, Socrates, and they're striving for wisdom. They had a word that described it, phronesis. Phronesis, meaning the application of wisdom. And so listen to the following definition. It was explained to me by a friend. The application of wisdom is being able to do, you know, and take this in mind when you're either a medical doctor or, and for my purposes here, a mental health therapist. Okay, application of wisdom, doing the right thing for the right reason, in the right way, at the right time, and in the right place. Reason, the right way, at the right time. Anyway, kind of mix those up. Doing the right thing for the right reason, for the right way. I'm drawing all this from memory. Doing the right thing to the right person, for the right reason, in the right way, at the right time, and in the right place. Yeah, there, those were the six. So imagine trying to live by that kind of mantra. That can only happen when one practices mindfulness and awareness. Me as a therapist, understanding where I'm at that day, trying to take care of myself and the things that I am bringing to the table to meet with clients. I've got to have some credibility and I have to do those things myself. So if I'm recommending regular exercise to clients, which I do, I have to exercise regularly, which I do. Or I've had certain dailies, like read. I'm also an advocate of reading consistently. I read 10 pages in a good book as a minimum every day. Checklist. Certain things that I do. And it also helps maintain energy and stopping energy leaks and energy loops that remain open. That's why we're exhausted all the time. That's how why a checklist can really help. I don't have to decide every day if I'm going to read 10 pages in a book. I don't have to decide every day if I'm going to get up and go exercise. Those are non-negotiable. I don't have to decide every day if I'm going to tell my wife that I love her and appreciate her. I simply do those things. I've done that so consistently as a part of my checklist that my wife this morning when I got up, I says, "Honey, I love you." And she goes, "I know. And you appreciate me." And she just gets a big smile on her face. No one gets tired of hearing that because I truly do mean that. And it makes it helps solidify our relationship as we're navigating through life together. I love you and appreciate you. Small and simple thing done on a consistent basis. So there's many best practices out there. So the dance is trying to find out individually. So a good therapist, if you're searching for a therapist, would be one that has a vast amount of knowledge and experience with many different things so that they can draw on their experience to help you individually. and listening for your feedback, because you are the one in charge of you. One of the things that I have found is foundational for, because I did this meta-analysis, this process called motivational interviewing, where they got all this information together, studying all sorts of therapies. And I think at latest count, they're like, I think I heard 3,000 different therapeutic approaches to mental health issues. And they discovered that one type of therapy is not necessarily better than another, but what is significant is who the therapist is and the way that therapist is in relationship to another person. Again, I know I've mentioned this in past podcasts, but the definition of motivational interviewing, which covers all different therapeutic styles, if you can be this way, and again, the definition of motivational interviewing, a way of being with people that enhances the intrinsic motivation for change. So in other words, the way a therapist is with another person either inhibits growth or welcomes and encourages growth. And here are some basic principles of the four main things that work. And this is what the researchers of thousands of hours of scouring and listening to therapeutic, you know, tapes and interviews and sessions and so forth. These four things: express empathy, meaning that an individual, in order for the healing process to really take hold, needs to have a sense of feeling heard and understood. In other words, do you care about me? They need to feel that. Do you care about me? Do you understand me? Do you have the skills to help me? And will you help me? That falls under the umbrella of empathy. Do you understand me? Do you care about me? Do you have the skill set to help me with my particular issue? And will you help me? Express empathy is number one in motivational interviewing. Number two is something called develop discrepancy. Discrepancy simply means an individual comes in, they present with an issue, and they don't want that issue. They're here at point A, and they want to get to point B. And so you at least identify that. Okay, so this is what is troubling you. This is what brought you here. Am I correct in understanding the issue? All right, now we can start working on methods to help find some alleviation from the pain and struggle you're having. So again, express empathy, develop discrepancy. Third is roll with resistance. There is something that is natural in us as human beings. It's called, I don't know what the right name would be for what I'm trying to express. It's kind of, if we push for change in a particular area, an individual will push back the opposite way. So we got to be extremely careful if we're suggesting change. But the purpose someone comes to therapy, so the therapist really, to be ethical, needs to have something within them and go, yeah, I want to help this person with this addiction or with this relationship issue. So I'm thinking of ways to do that. But as I express some suggestions, it's very common for someone to say, I've already tried that. Nah, that's not going to work, and so forth. And so you've got to be able to roll with that. Go, all right. Well, it's worked for some people. It may not work for you. There are other options that might work for you. The gentle approach with them. And then the fourth component to motivational interviewing is something called always support self-efficacy, meaning you choose. You get to choose for yourself. So just wanted to throw that out there. Ponder that. A way of being with people is the most important thing that a therapist or any relationship that you have with another person, that is the most powerful thing, the character. So anyway, just leave you with that to ponder and incorporate into your own life. How well do you do those four things? Express empathy, help a person figure out where they're at, where they want to be, not be too forceful in what you're trying to do to fix the problem. People just want to be listened to and understood, and they've got to choose for themselves how to change, support self-efficacy. So, and again, motivational interviewing, best practice. So no matter what mode of therapy is out there, if they can, a clinician really has worked on developing that skill set, it's a significant thing in order to help a person move forward with their particular issue. All right. Okay, that's what I want to leave you with today. Just thoughts that I had running around in my head this morning. Have a great day.